One of the most powerful exercises to make a list of every person you ever felt that you wronged and try to make amends. And I made this list and then I worked through it and I reached out to these people and I apologized. I wrote to some of them. I called some of them. I tried to meet people in person.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
Hey, 18 Summers Tribe, Jim here. I am really excited for this next episode. It's going to be with Dan Martell. Dan's been a friend of ours for a little over 10 years. We've had family cruises together, spent some time in his house up where he used to live in Eastern Canada. We've always shared some core values of not only family, but setbacks, overcoming obstacles, and making the most of entrepreneurship while not leaving our family behind. Just to give you a little bit about Dan, he's a serial entrepreneur. He's built several multi-million dollar technology companies starting at age 17. We're going to talk about some of his earlier years, which were not a straight line. Most of us don't have that, neither did Dan, and it's very inspiring what we talk about. He's an award-winning angel investor. In fact, he was the Angel Investor of the Year in Canada in 2013. He's investing in companies like Intercom, Udemy, Hootsuite, Unbounce, just to name a few. Now he's his own B2B business for SaaS, working with the founders of ClickFunnels, Prosify, Carrot, and many others. And these help scale businesses in a lot more predictable ways. He used to live in Eastern Canada, but now he lives in Kelowna, British Columbia, with his wife, Renee, who's a great lady, and his two sons. We're going to really get into some deep conversations today about things we don't normally talk about, not only in my own personal life, but Dan's. I think it's going to really inspire some of the entrepreneur families out there and give them some takeaways that they can really put to use. We'll talk to you guys soon.
So 18 Summers Tribe, welcome back again. We are here with our good friend, successful entrepreneur and husband, dad, Dan Martell. Dan, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing world class. I'm really excited. Appreciate the opportunity. Excited to chat. Got a lot of fun topics to cover.
I know. We're excited to have you here. I mean, we've known you about 10 years. You know, we met at the entrepreneur event and then we got to have some family cruises together. You hosted at your house as we were going on some RV adventures. And I didn't realize, I mean, first, let's just, you're a very successful entrepreneur. Going back to your tech days of building Flowtown, Clarity FM, SaaS Academy, which you're still running, and an angel investor. But one of the coolest things about you, Dan, we had known each other for years, is I'm sitting there in Toronto, I forget which big event it is, and you're telling your come from behind story, the beginnings. And I was like, this is incredible. Like, more people have to hear this. First of all, I was a troublemaker. I got in a lot of trouble, similar to you. But just to hear how you made opportunity out of crisis, I loved. So I would love with our community, if you kind of share some of that come from behind, where you started. Because I think it's just such a powerful share.
I appreciate it, Jim. It's funny because, like, I think it was the Giovanni's event, our Archangel.
It was.
And what a lot of people don't realize is that was the first time I'd ever shared that story publicly.
Wow.
And I was 36. So it was about 6 years ago. And Giovanni had saw me share it with a smaller private group a few years prior. And when he asked me to speak, he was like, could you share on that topic? And man, the nerves were high. Like, this is what's crazy is nobody who knew me knew any of that. So they all knew Dan, the software entrepreneur. My investors didn't know any of that. My, you know, we had grown as a family. I mean, I grew up second oldest of four kids. My sister was the oldest, two younger brothers. And when I look at the challenges we went through as a family, from my mom struggled with alcoholism and my dad was a workaholic. And so he was always on the road. I got diagnosed with ADHD when I was 11, put on Ritalin, was on medication my whole life. And that was when it really, like, for me, I just felt broken at a very young age. I just felt like there must be something wrong with me. Why do I have to go see a psychologist? And I had a pretty severe anger issue that caused my parents to have to call the police one day and take me out of our house when I was 12. And I got put into a crisis center and eventually a group home, foster care. So yeah, I grew up in the system, even though, like, it's weird because I grew up in a pretty white collar neighborhood. Like, but what happened was, is because I got put into the system, I started spending time with kids that were older than me teaching me stuff I should have never been learning as a 12, 13 year old. And when I was 13, I got introduced to drugs. And that's really when my life spiraled out of control. And for the next 6 or 3 years, till I was 16, I ended up in jail my first time when I was 15. And then when I got out, I remember there was this guard and I said, like, nice to get to know you, but never see you again. Have an amazing life. And he's like, we always see you. And I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah, I'll see you soon. Wow. And I was like, that's so weird. Why would you say that? And he's like, we always do. And I was like, well, not me. I lasted about a day. I literally got out, thought going to go to the gym and stay away from my old friends. And by that night, literally, I got back that night. They were calling, heard you're out, want to hang out, and just got right back where I left off. And what happened was, is when you try to clean up your life and then you relapse, the guilt just eats at you. And I had made all these commitments while I was away to my family and my parents and my brothers. And as soon as I jumped back into that life, I just felt so much guilt that it almost like compounded the addiction to try to escape those feelings. And it got so bad that I ended up doing some crimes that caused me to go on the run. The police were looking for me. My brother actually called me. He, you know, he tried to give me a heads up that the police were waiting at the house for me. So I didn't even go home. And then I spent 6-7 weeks living on friends' couches, hiding in the woods, hunting camps. And eventually I stole a car because I figured, well, maybe if I go to a different city, and I made my way to Montreal. I'm from the East Coast of Canada. And on that drive, a routine stop, there was a roadblock just checking driver's license and registration and car insurance. And I was high and drunk and had a handgun sitting next to me in a backpack. Because when I stole the car, I told myself that if, you know, if I got stopped, I'd let the police take my life, and ended up in a high-speed chase going way too fast. I was probably going like 120 miles or 200 kilometers an hour. Yeah, 120 miles an hour in like neighborhoods, like just full on. And as I was driving, I saw an open garage door and I came around a corner and tried to like hide in the garage and kind of make a run for it. And I ended up taking too much speed and smashed into the side of the house. And by the time the police caught me, I went for the gun. And for whatever reason, it got stuck.
Wow.
And I kept pulling on it and pulling on it. And as soon as the door opened, the police just like grabbed me. I wasn't even buckled in. Feet didn't touch the ground. Floated across the front lawn, thrown in the backseat of the cop car. And I woke up sober the next morning, just wondering what my life was going to look like. You know, I was facing some serious charges, like years. And I ended up going to an adult prison due to the severity of my crimes, this place called St. John Regional Correctional Center. And I pleaded with the police or with the judge to, I needed help. I wanted to go to rehab. I'd heard of this place called Portage. He said, you know what? I don't believe you. Prove it. And I ended up doing 6 months of my sentence. It was a year and a half sentence in this adult prison. And I'd love to say that I smartened up there, but I ended up getting in a fight with this kid named Kirk, thrown in the hole, spent 3 days in solitary confinement, which is 23 and a half hours locked down in your underwear, lights on, no mattress, concrete. Like that's it. Steel toilet and sink, and let out in this like caged in 10 by 10 square to get some air. And then thrown back in. And it was probably like the lowest point of my life. And while I was in there, this prison guard, Brian, opened the door on the third day. And they wouldn't even tell you how long you'd be there, right? It could have been a week, 2 weeks. But third day, he opens the door. And you know, Brian was one of those people that, especially like in prison, that he was strict, but have some grace. The best way I can explain it is, if there was an extra dessert, he'd kind of look the other way and let you take it. If you were good to him, yeah, he just, you don't mess with him, but he wasn't strict for the sake of being strict. Like he understood kind of the prison rules and the give and take. And
he knew you were still a human and a young man.
100%. And so he grabs me and first thing, he's just shaking his head. Like, what are you doing in here? Follow me. And, we ended up walking down the hallway And this is, again, adult jail. So I'm like looking into these different cell blocks with like adult in there in the rooms. And like, we go past the cell block that we were in. So the door's there that goes in this like open room with the two stories of cell blocks. And we go into the guard center, which we weren't allowed there. And I was like, why is he bringing me in here? And he opens the door and it's the two-sided mirror. So we can never see inside. So I never seen inside it, but I mean, I stared at it for months. And he asked me to sit down in the corner. It's just him and I. And he looks at me and he goes, why are you here? I'm like, well, I got in a fight with Kirk. They put me in the hole. And he goes, no, no, no. He goes, not the fight. He goes, what are you doing here? And I was like, stolen car, break and enter, guns. He's like, no, Dan. He goes, I've seen hundreds of kids like you come here. And I see you doing your homework, working on your art, trying to stay out of the prison politics. Like, I have no idea why you are in this place. Like, you don't belong here. And that was the first time any adult I ever felt that he saw something in me that I definitely didn't feel.
Yeah.
And that shifted everything. That was like, well, here's a guard that knows. He's seen other kids like me. He's telling me that I don't belong here. And I always thought growing up that I was broken, that I was bad, that I was the troublemaker. I had all these identities that I believed in. And those words transformed my life. It started with a small seed. Then I like worked more at it to like honor Brian for him saying that. And
you
know, yeah.
If you looked at my note page right now, Dan, I have written down, Brian, why are you here? So you told that on stage and we never talked about it since, you know, I mean, I said that was incredible, but that stuck with me. And even that, I was like, everyone needs a Brian. And I was like, how can I be a Brian? I've said that to Jamie when we were prepping for this. And I was hoping you would bring that up because I just think that's such a powerful concept, what happened that day with you.
You know, it's fascinating about that. People always want to know if I ever circled back with Brian. Few things. One, as you can probably imagine, it is incredibly hard to connect with, and like, prison guards are not online. They do not want to be easily found, if that makes sense. So this took
an abundance of people looking to thank them.
It took years. I think it was 12 years of me asking my parole people. They're like, we can't really do this, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, look, here's who I am. Like, I'm not the same kid.
Gift basket.
And I just kept telling, you know, like, ask it. And what was funny is when I finally talked to Brian, he didn't really remember the conversation.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing that no matter, just something so small can make such a big difference?
And I think the reason why is because he probably did that with a lot of kids.
Yeah.
But how
that was who he was.
But he was right on you. He was dead right on you. And what I love about that too, Dan, correct me if I'm wrong. We all go, oh yeah, well, but I don't have the family backing or the education. I mean, here you are, multiple tech companies. But if I remember right, you said, fine, Brian said this. And you found like an old dusty textbook on coding while you were stuck in there, right?
It was in rehab. So what happened was is, he spoke a belief in identity of who I was not. Like, I had all these negative beliefs. And then I did all the work that judge told me to do. Like, show me that you're serious about taking your sobriety serious and I'll release you to a rehab center. And I ended up getting put in this place, released to a place called Portage, New Brunswick. And I spent 11 months working on myself, rebuilding the relationships with my family, understanding my emotional anger, my confidence. I had like zero confidence whatsoever. I just felt like, why am I even alive? Like, there was nothing there. I didn't feel like I was talented. I didn't feel like I had anything to give the world. And it was 11 months into the program. I actually like graduated through this really intense, beautiful place. And I was helping Rick, the maintenance guy, clean out one of the camps. It was an old church camp that they converted into this place. So they had these like different cabins on the property. And there's just one cabin that we never used because it was full of stuff. So Rick asked me, because I was one of the kind of senior people that he trusted, if I could help him clean it out. And as I was cleaning out this cabin, there was a room, and in it, there was an old 486 computer, like super old desktop computer and a yellow book on Java programming sitting next to it. And I don't know what it was. Like, I've always been kind of good at math, which is kind of weird. I did one time in high school, I did like 98 on a math test and my teacher called the principal and was convinced I cheated. Like, literally there's no way this kid that never listens, hardly comes to class, did 98. Like, who did this test for you? How did you do it? For some reason, it just made sense. And I opened up this book on programming and I was like, wow, I thought it would be like ones and zeros and hexadecimal numbers and all these weird language. And it reads like English. And I just followed the book and boot up the computer and type into the terminal. And I get the computer to say, hello world. And wow. I was like, holy crap. And I never touched a computer. Like we didn't have a computer at home. I didn't grow up around computers. I just thought maybe my brain had this, like, you remember Doogie Howser?
Oh yeah.
The show. I actually thought to myself, like, oh, maybe I'm broken, but I'm broken in this weird way. And what's funny is that it didn't matter if it was true. Unfortunately, it's not true. I'm not that gifted as a software programmer. I've hired hundreds, but it didn't matter because it actually became my new addiction. I found something that I enjoyed that when other people heard, they went, oh, wow, really? You like programming? And, you know, I got out of rehab a few weeks later and there was this thing called the internet. This is 1997, 98. And I got on the internet, turned out to be kind of a big deal. And it was just timing. And entrepreneurship has always been in my veins. My dad would joke if I could just find something I was passionate about that wasn't illegal, that maybe I'd do something with my life, yeah. You know, because I just was intense about stuff. It didn't matter if it was growing weed or
sure.
Whatever I was into. And entrepreneurship for me became the ultimate personal development program. It was like every time I'd stumble, I'd just look in the mirror and go, who do I need to become to achieve this goal? Like it was That's just incredible. This beautiful forcing function to become more. And continues to this point in my life, more so today probably than back then.
And I think, Dan, you also, with you and I, and Jamie has to put up with this, I know Renee does too, ADD has its gifts of hyper-focus. And like you did with tech, what I did with real estate investing, you're a dog to a bone, but it has to be channeled. That's the key, like what your dad said. And I'm constantly reminded by that of mentors and Jamie and people. If you put it in the right direction, man, it's good. If you don't, it can go
destructive
just as quick.
And and that's why like a big part of my life today is continuing to work. So like, even though I never told that story till I was 36, right? And this happened when I was 17. Every year, 3-4 times a year, I would go visit the rehab center that saved my life, Portage. Sorry. Still to this day, I still go. Even it's the other side of Canada, when I'm there, I always make a trip. And the reason why is because I go speak to these kids who I think you mentioned about chaos and ADHD and like entrepreneurship. It's like when I go speak today, like I was just speaking in Vancouver, a bunch of VC tech founders. And I asked them like to close their eyes and answer a question. When you were between the ages of 9 and 13, did you go through chaos in your life? Hands go up. Nobody can see. I can see. 70% of the room put their hands up. I'm not surprised by that because what I discovered is the kids in rehab, the at-risk youth that I work with, people that have gone through chaos, they learn at a young age that uncertainty is comfortable. And if you think about what entrepreneurship is, it's being able to deal with a huge amount of uncertainty and continue to move forward. Where some people, it cripples them. For us, it's kind of like normal. If anything, we got to watch out that we don't throw hand grenades in our business to create chaos because that is normal.
Yes.
Right?
Which definitely happens.
I get accused of that.
So we do this all the time. Things are going great. Oh, let's revamp our business. Let's
fuck it up.
Yeah. Let's blow it up and rebuild it. It's like, whoa, can we just have some space?
Goes that way. So Dan, I'm wondering on this ADD thread that we're on, what do you do now to help you control throwing those grenades? How do you help control being able to focus and move in that line?
It's a beautiful question, Jamie, because here's my journey with attention deficit disorder, hyperactive disorder, just labels of like being broken in general. I was on Ritalin, Adderall until I was 32. Okay. And I didn't like who I was on it to the point that I would only take it when I had to do like financial stuff, paperwork, like needed to focus because it wasn't me. Like, this is me. I am high energy, high octane, driven, creative, nutty, and I'm okay with that. But back then I was like, oh, that's not right. I got to be like Mr. Buttoned Up business person. I wore a business suit every day for 4 years when I started my first company. So like a lot of growth, a lot of learnings. And what changed for me was reading a few books. Driven by Distraction is one of my ultimate go-tos that talks about this. Just understanding that there's other people that were like me that were incredibly high performers. Like very productive, successful people. And it turns out if you like look on dyslexia and ADHD and all these things, that is actually part of most really successful entrepreneurs because they see the world differently. And that's what's required to build these incredible companies and products. So what I did is I worked with a friend who had helped other people get off the medication because it actually is a stimulant. It's like coffee. It's like cocaine for some people. There's a reason why a lot of people do this recreational. And I had to like slowly get off the dosage till the point where I could like turn it off without too much side effects. And then I went to like the things that, and it's actually one of the most popular videos on my YouTube channel is how I deal with ADHD without medication. And I'm not against medication. I think some people, I have a friend of mine right now, just started recently. And I said, look, you need to take a year and give yourself an advantage because his life was so dysfunctional without it that I was like, you're trying to run a marathon, but you don't even know how to walk. Like, feel free to take a year or two on the medication to kind of resort your life out to build these habits that you can then kind of slingshot into to something else if you choose. So what do I do today is my diet. So sugar will totally screw me. So like, right? Like I have an apple on my desk because I eat it at 10:30 because my blood sugar gets low, but I don't have chocolate, processed flour, blah, blah, blah. I wake up early and I meditate, right? I set my intentions for the day. I pre-plan the day before, the night before, the Sunday for the week. And it's in my calendar. Like this morning, if you look at my calendar, it's the three projects I wanted to move forward before 9 a.m. because the mornings when I have that ability to focus, the afternoons is when I rather talk, right? So I'd rather start early, get my creative work done when the juices are flowing.
You're very similar.
Yeah. I think a lot, like it's this pattern. Yeah.
We're so similar on that, Dan. And you know what the funny thing is? I actually took a different route. This is really interesting. We've never talked about this. So I went the second route where I got really into meditation, into personal development. I learned that the way I was wired, if I exercised 2 hours a day, I was good. And it started in the morning,
like all working the dog.
You just said.
Yeah.
But about 5 years ago, I was going through a lot of transition, breaking off a major business venture, going through it. And I was getting that craziness where you just said, hey, that's what we're used to. And for some reason, I forget what got in my head that I wasn't going to be able to handle it. So for the first time, this was about 5 or 6 years ago, so I would have been early 40s. I went into Adderall for a very short time. And Dan, for the last 3 weeks I was on it, I was suicidal every night.
You've never shared that.
I don't know if I've shared it. Well, Dan shares his big stuff.
No, I know, but I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you because I'm sitting here going, gosh, we really should share this with our audience. And I hope you were comfortable.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, it was terrifying.
Dan gets credit for integration, which we'll get to in a minute. And now for bringing me out of the closet in this. But Dan, I was doing really well on my own. All the things you just said, I was doing, but I felt like I needed more. Other people I knew were doing it. And it was the weirdest thing. I would wake up in the middle of the night and I would say, why am I here? My family's better off without me. We have a big insurance policy. I shouldn't even be here. It was horrible. And I had this, it was this distinct knowing that, hey, no, I'm right. There's no way that this is unclear thinking. So I don't know if I had started it so late. It wasn't a weaning off that I jumped on and it became so severe to one night that I, and maybe this wasn't the smartest way because I've been told to, you want to talk to a doctor about this, about the weaning off. I went cold turkey. And I never went back again.
Because you got, and it, I mean, it was scary.
It stopped within 48 hours. So for me, and like I said, I think there's a time and a place for therapy and for medication. But just so you know, I had a really adverse result. I think because I was doing what you moved on to first, and I thought, no, let me try this. And I had such an adverse effect. It just did the opposite of support me.
I mean, I appreciate you sharing that. This is the thing with a lot of these medications, anxiety medication, ADHD medication, et cetera, is that the truth is they're all different. Like Adderall is different than Vyvanse or whatever. I don't even know the names of them anymore, but I do know that everybody reacts differently. And the thoughts is where we can get ourselves in a downward spiral. And it's, man, it's dangerous. That's why I tell people like, explore it, work with the doctor, test different ones, test different dosages and see if it fits for you. And if it doesn't, just stop. But the exercise, so like, so no sugar, hydration. When I say hydration, 3 liters of water is the minimum. I do 4 liters right now every day. I'm doing something Ironman training. It's a little high. Most people would think, well, that's stupid, but whatever. And then exercise, because exercise to me, it's what you're saying, Jamie. It turns over the engine, it clears out the, I don't know, and it's the endorphins. You just kind of feel great, right? Yeah. So like, to me, if you had to like, I'll tell you a really, I think a powerful story. I had a team member working for me, a young kid, he was 19. He shared this story publicly, but I'm not gonna mention his name, but he was one of my videographers. And I'd just gotten off stage speaking at a nonprofit that does therapy sessions for free for at-risk youth. And the executive director asked me to come speak to the counselors because they were just depleted. You know, working with kids, you just get beat up all the time. And I went in there to share kind of my story and hopefully breathe some belief into them. And when we got in the car, he turns to me and he goes, "Hey man, can I ask you something?" I said, "What?" He goes, "You know, I've been dealing with a lot of depression, anxiety lately. And I went to see my doctor and he gave me medication and you mentioned your story and I don't like the way I feel." And I go, "Well, the doctor talk to you about your diet?" He's like, "No." I was like, "Yeah." "Did he talk to you about drinking more water and hydrating?" He's like, "No." I said, "Did he talk about sweating every day?" And he's like, "No." And I'm like, "Hey man, do what you want to do."
Yeah.
I'm going to name him because his name is Sam. Sam decides to just try it. Okay. Sam was 18, 19 at the time. If you met Sam today, 3 years later, he was 178 weight. He now weighs 220 pounds. He's got a beautiful girlfriend. There's no anxiety. He got off the medication in 3 months and his new addiction is actually lifting weights because something that happens in your mind that it's weird. I always joke. It's like you pick it up, you put it down. Like it's such a stupid thing, but it just, the thoughts you have, the creativity, the clearing of it, the filtering. I don't know what it is, but I'm just like, I see
some sort of filtering. I think that's a good word.
It
filters the right lines together.
Well, I think too, the way that, I mean, we were created to do physical work, right? And now we spend most of our days watching people do things on the internet.
Being entertained, sedentary,
live our life, we watch other people do the things in which we could go do. So things, you know, hunting, gathering, building, all of those things that really are in our bones to continue to keep moving through. I have a handful of questions. I'm looking at the time. I'm like, oh my God.
I'll be shorter on my answers, but I'd love to answer.
I don't want you to be shorter. I didn't know we were going to go this way.
I know. But every time you talk, I'm like, ooh, I have another question. So one thing that you mentioned pretty early on was the weight of guilt from the beginning experiences. And in addition to having something like ADHD and then feeling guilt and shame, which is something you're naturally inclined to, as I know, as a mother of two people and a wife, but the way and all that works, how did you deal with that dynamic in your life so that you could then continue to move forward?
One of the most powerful exercises that this place Portage, and I know AA does this, is to make a list of every person you ever felt that you wronged and try to make amends. And the challenge is sometimes those people aren't even here on earth anymore, right? But it's still important to forgive, to apologize, to, you know, whatever it is. And just that exercise of like writing down, I mean, this kid that I stole his comic book when I was in grade 7, that I never told him, that he doesn't know that I stole it, that I, you know what I mean? Like everything that I ever did.
Yes.
And I tried to make it right. Get him a new comic book, apologize. This guy broke into his car. I knew he worked because, you know, I got caught by the cops and they told me who he was. And I like circled back my foster dad, Dave, this literally this incredible human being that never had a foster kid. He was a single guy. He wanted to give back. He never had kids of his own. I show up and light fireworks off in his house. I was messing around Roman candles and the whole thing just exploded to the point where he never had another foster kid. Like I felt so much guilt of like these incredible human beings that I just didn't know any better how to control myself. And I made this list and then I worked through it and I reached out to these people and I apologized. I wrote to some of them. I called some of them. I tried to meet people in person. The people that weren't around. I mean, I've never shared this. When I was in jail the first time, one of my best friends growing up, this girl named Mandy, my brother came to visit and I'm sitting there in the visitor room and he just says, "Mandy died."
Wow.
And I said, "How?" And he told me that she had been partying at this camp in the woods that was near a river that we used to go jump off these cliffs. And in the middle of the night, high and drunk, she went to go to the bathroom and she fell off the cliff. And I felt so much guilt for not being with her. I would have been there. Like, we hung out. There's no way that, I don't know, like, I just would have took care of her. And I just felt so much guilt for not being there. And that's a big, I mean, a big part of my giving is to honor Mandy. Like, I literally think about her every other month. Just like, I reach out to her mom. I've donated street benches, Mandy Legacy on the back of it. I go, like, it's just, to me, it's, she represents where I should have ended up. And I'm lucky that God decided not to have me walk down that path. And that's why people are like, why are you so intense? I'm like, fucking every day, I can't not honor the people. I just can't not do it.
You're turning opportunity into crisis with a good purpose and heart behind it. So it's beautiful. I really appreciate you sharing that, because that is extremely hard.
There's guilt. I share that because I had so much guilt I had to process. And like, I had to write a letter to Mandy and apologize, right? Like, I had to make those phone calls. And that was probably the most valuable. And then there's a whole bunch of other stuff that personal development and, you know, we're not responsible for other people's actions and just that kind of stuff. But that was a big exercise. I think a lot of people could get some value from.
I think you're right. And I've been on the receiving end of those before as well. And I know that it is powerful. And I even think I made myself a little note, like, make a list of apologies. There's things that we all carry around, you know, and it can be like the tiniest of minutiae, like you said, that comic book. But like, somehow that comic book pops in your damn mind 40 years later and you're like, oh, comic book. And so it does. And so, and that's very freeing. And I think a great example. And even to show our children, you know, do you share some of this with your boys yet?
So what's funny is, I was speaking at a church camp, and a friend of mine, Marcel, is a software entrepreneur, sold his company, bought a church camp. It's the biggest church camp now. It's awesome. My kids actually ended up going there, but when I first spoke there, they were just too young for the program. And to the integration part, I always try to bring the family with me, but they'd never seen me share this story. Again, I always shared it privately in small groups, never recorded. That was the first time you guys saw it, was the first time I ever put it live on stage in front of thousands of people. And so I'm telling this story, and the kids, they're like 3 and 4, 4 and 5, Max and Noah are little, right? Sitting in the back with Renee, and they start screaming, "You went to jail, daddy?"
Oh, wow.
And I'm just like, oh, I underestimated what I'm doing here. Like, I never told them. They're hearing it first time as I'm speaking to all these other kids. And yeah, today, so crazy story that just happened a month ago that'll tie this whole thing in. So they've always come, they've seen me. It's on YouTube now. Like, that video that you talked about is actually on YouTube. It's The Power of Belief is what it's called on my YouTube channel. So every 2 years, my brother and I, we do a Martell March break. We take the whole family, 18 people, and go under one roof and go skiing. So we've done it different ski hills. And the one that just happened in March was a Big White. And every night I was putting the kids to bed. I was like, hey guys, I want to put the kids to bed. It's my nieces and nephews. And it just would be a lot of fun. They're like, cool, Uncle Dan, let's put the kids to bed. They're like, I'm drinking wine. Like, but yeah, let him do it. So I would go to bed. And I would tell them stories. And one night, this is probably the fourth night, I'm laying on the ground. There's like those rooms with like 6 bunk beds. So like, they're all, the kids are there leaning over, and I'm just laying on the ground and I'm telling this story. And I said, what do you guys want to hear tonight? And my brother's son screams out, tell us about the time you stole the car. And I'm like, how do you know about that? He goes, I saw it on YouTube. And I'm like, oh snap. And I go, does everybody else know? Yeah, we know about it. You went to prison and you had a gun. And I'm like, oh, wow. Okay.
Out there, right?
Wow.
Yeah. So what I did is I said, I'll tell you the story, but I told the story about little Dan, little D, I called him. So I said, look, I'll tell you guys a story, but I'm going to tell you a story about little D. And I used the little D character and I told it about this other kid, and I shared the emotions, the feelings, and then who little D became. But it was never Dan. And then I said he became Big D. And this is what Big D believes today. And this is who he's become, because what he went through, it allowed him to learn these lessons that have really helped him out. And at the end, I was putting him to bed, and what my other brother's little girl turns to me and she goes, I know you're little D.
That's so good.
Our secret.
That's awesome.
Yeah. When you asked that question, up until March, I would have said not too many people knew, but now it's that YouTube.
Yeah. But I think the power in that, Dan, a recent family talk I've started to do is about killing Superman. And there's different talks about killing Superman. What I found, and this really brought a lot of entrepreneurs to their emotional knees, is we hold up this image of perfection, that where there is no fear, there is no guilt, there is no doubt, there are no setbacks. And so how can our kids relate to us? Or how can our nieces and nephews relate to us? The worst thing I think you can do is set up some air of perfection.
Like you don't cry. Because you don't feel disappointment. You don't fail.
I was a straight line.
You don't make mistakes. You don't say sorry.
I mean, mistakes, all these things.
And, life doesn't suck for you ever. Yeah.
They feel so separate. They're like, wow, Uncle Dan really is immortal. He really is Superman. He's never had a problem. I have nothing in common with Uncle Dan. That's what a 6 or 7 or 8 year old would think. And so I'm saying, kill Superman. Tell about all those vulnerabilities, everything you're talking about. Man, my friend passed away. And I think there is instantly a camaraderie, a connection, because like you just said, 70% of a successful room raise their hand. All of them are internally raising their hands, and you're giving them the chance to do it by not saying, oh no, I was a straight A student, I did this, all the way through, perfect trajectory. I just think it's a very powerful thing that we constantly try to do with our kids.
It's hard.
Constantly, yeah.
So hard.
Yeah.
I'm impressed that your nieces and nephews and children watch your YouTube stuff. Our boys are like, wait, what? You do that? They've never taken.
Here's the reason why.
They could care less.
The real estate.
They're like, wait, yeah. You're kind of faint. Like, what?
Well, no, this is why is a lot of my friends have this problem is I tag them when they go to my website. So they've been remarketed.
Okay.
So that's what's funny is that I'm emailing my friend and he goes to my website. Well, he's just bam, tagged. So when he goes to YouTube, boom, my channel's just, so when his kids jump on their iPad, it's like Dan all, and he's like, how do I stop this? So
that's
the double-edged sword.
We'll have you do that on Alden Leland's phone.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll be following them around.
Well, hey, awesome. I know we're at about the top of the time, but I wanted to ask one question, and that's integration. I mean, that's a word that you taught me when we started to really share back and forth. You're like, hey man, it's integration, not balance. I'm like, that's brilliant.
Because everybody always asks us about
how
balance.
How do you do balance?
Like, integration.
I said, my friend Dan taught me the word integration a long time ago. I haven't used the word balance in 7 years, whatever it is. But do you want to explain the word integration real quick over balance? Because I think it's just a powerful concept.
Yeah, I think the core belief that I have is that the more we can be who we are expressed 100% of the time is just a great place to live in life, right? Mm-hmm. And I think what happens often is we have like this character we play at work and we have this character we play at home and they shall never meet. And mm-hmm. What I've always loved about my dad is my dad used to take us to his shop. He was a general manager of a machine shop. And on weekends, he'd have to go get some work done. He'd bring us in. Now we went in the back machine area and wired ourselves up with harness to the cranes and went flying. We were doing stuff back there he wasn't too pumped about, but we got to see my dad's work, right? And he would take us on business trips and like we'd stay in the hotel and he'd go meet with clients and then come back and, you know, and then we threw all the pool furniture in the pool. I mean, it's so, if you ever meet my dad, you could ask him these stories. It's hilarious, but he never stopped doing it because he wanted to be with us and he wanted to show us what he did. I got my MBA in business sitting in the car, listening to my dad talk on a phone, period, full stop. There's a reason why I'm so into entrepreneurship and business and indirectly was listening to my dad. And I just wanted that to be true for my life because I also think that if your kids don't actually see how the sausage is made, if they don't see what you do day to day, then it's just like this, we hang out, I go to school, I come back, we hang out. Like they don't understand the other 8, 9, 10 hours or when you're traveling, what's going on. So from day one, my son Max was at my first board meeting for clarity.fm. Like he was 4 months old. Yeah, I got him a little onesie that said future founder, put him on the board table. He's quiet. We're going to do this meeting. Then I'm going to grab and meet my wife for lunch. So like that's just been the nature. And I definitely was inspired by my dad. I think like everything, you know, he was a workaholic, but he meant well, he just didn't understand the other side of it, right? The killing your Superman. My dad never showed us when he was struggling. I only saw my dad cry the first time when his father passed away when I was 9. Wow. Like no emotions, right? But that was the way he was raised, right? His parents probably never ever. So it's like, to me, Renee and I, when we first met, when we talked about how do we want to be parents and what kind of life we want to live, it was never balanced because we're both entrepreneurial. It was integration. And then I would say the great like analogy that I heard from my buddy, Brad Pedersen, is the rubber balls and the glass ball. Yeah. It's like some things you can drop and focus on different things. And those are rubber balls, business, health, finances, et cetera. You can always bring them back. But the glass ball is your family, right? Or the crystal ball. So rubber balls and crystal balls. And the family one is the one that you want to make sure that you're always spending time and investing in. So to me, it's, that's another method, like an analogy that I like to think about. It's just like, hey, I'm going to go deep on this thing and try to. And then the other thing for integration is I bring my work family together. So what does that mean? We went to Costa Rica as a family. While I was there, two clients reached out and said they were in Nosara. And I was like, okay, well, we're going there next week. Why don't we get together and do a play date? So we went to my client's Airbnb and we had a play date with the whole family. He's like, is that work? Is that not work? Like yesterday I went to the pool because I've been gone for like a month. And the girl that works there, Claire, goes, haven't seen you in a while, Dan. What have you been up to? I said, traveling. Anywhere is cool. I kind of smiled. So yeah, she goes, where? I go, Costa Rica, Cabo, and Utah. She's like, oh, wow. Work or pleasure? And I just smile. I said, both.
Yeah.
She goes, that's the way to do it. I go, that's just how I decided a long time I want to do life. Like it's a, you have to make the decision that when I say yes to things, they have to meet this filter. And if they don't, I say no. So like, for example, I don't go on vacations that don't have a physical component to them. I don't enjoy sitting on the beach and hanging out poolside. Are we mountain biking on certain days? Are we going to hike some mountains? Like, what is the component of this that's going to make some physicality to it? Because I just look back on my life and say, well, these are the things I really enjoyed this year. These three things all had a thing in common. How do I do that forward? So the integration part is something we probably decided 5-6 years ago that we're just going to make the family and the business and the people that are business partners just all one thing, because I don't want to have to try to pretend to be somebody I'm not. I just want to be who I am. And if that attracts people, that's what we're going to do. So founder hikes every Tuesday. I've been doing that for over a year and a half now that since I moved to Kelowna. I work out on weekends, big triathlon training with my clients that are in town. Like just, it's all integrated.
That's great. It's such a powerful concept. I love that because that balance, it's like you think of those little cubes when you used to have those scales in school. I mean, that makes it so finite to try to keep it at that level. I'd rather the yin and yang like you're talking about.
Well, and we found that the more you express all of yourself in every area, the more people are attracted to that because they're like, oh, you're multifaceted. Oh, you also have a family. Oh, you also have a passion besides just showing up on these calls to get.
For years, Dan, I kept my, well, you know about my family talks and family retreats. I kept it almost like a brick wall line between that and my real estate investing. And I finally said, what the hell am I doing? I just knocked down the wall. I've gotten so much business on the real estate investment side.
I remember seeing that. I didn't even know about your real estate. I only knew the family side.
I didn't even share it.
And people, I know.
People are like, wait, you do real estate? So, and then other people, real estate would say, wait, you have a family company? And yeah, and I knocked down the wall. It's the best thing I've ever done. Mm-hmm. And again, kudos to you. I'm like, why the hell am I not integrating everything on this? Mm-hmm. And yeah, so it's been a huge
Shout out back to you guys, because as I looked at my calendar this morning on Saturday, I've got a board meeting with my boys. Well, one Saturday and Sunday, we do one Renee and I swap. But I mean, that's been such an incredible rhythm to add to our lives that our kids are, they thrive. They're like, when's our next board meeting? I'm like, I think it's in a month. All right, let's plan. What do you want to do?
Even Alden said, Dad, when's my next board meeting? He's 18. So yeah, it works. Keep it going, buddy. That's one thing we're sure of. That'll keep working for you. So, hey, last question.
Well, before then, where can people learn more about you?
Yeah, I always say danmartel.com if you want to get tagged and see my YouTube videos and my Facebook ads. Instagram stories is the behind the scenes. If people actually want to see how I live my life, Instagram stories and my YouTube is where I teach everything I know. It's one of my core philosophies on my manifesto. So if you want to learn about business and life and personal development and all that, you can search my name and the thing you want to learn about. We got 400 or 500 videos now. So it's all up on YouTube.
Good for you.
Impressive.
Final question. This is our finale question always. We used to always say, what would you say to 21-year-old Dan? And that's a great thing, but we've all gone through that. A couple of years ago, going into the pandemic, Jamie and I started to ask the question when we're facing big things. All right, what advice would our 75-year-old self give to us right now? You know, the older, wiser self. So looking down the road, hopefully still mountain biking and triathlon, and 75-year-old Dan, what advice do you think 75-year-old Dan would give to you and the rest of us right now?
It'd be business or otherwise.
That's a great question. Probably wouldn't be business. It would probably be explore more. Mm-hmm. And I think what explore more would be stop ordering the same stuff off the menu, stop going to the same places, just fight against the comfortable.
Mm. Explore more. I love
fight
it, buddy.
The comfortable. Awesome.
I love it. Well, we're great always question. Happy to see you. I can't wait to see you in another 2 months, I guess we'll all be together again.
I still have so many questions.
I know.
We're going to hang out.
We need that you and Renee as well.
Oh, yeah. Renee's she's the genius in the relationship.
And now that we know you love Nisora, we bought a house there last year. So now.
Did you really? So Christy's down there? Yeah, we really fell in love with that area. I mean, you guys obviously know that if you bought a house. I mean, it's just got a vibe.
Yeah, we were married there 10 years ago. Yeah,
it's a special spot. So we'll plan that next adventure on that. But we'd love to have you and Renee back on. Thanks for sharing your story and all
Thank
the vulnerability.
Thank you for being so vulnerable.
Bringing me out of the closet on my own issues on this episode. You get full credit for that. And integration.
You get some credit
too. I'll take a little. But integration has been huge for us, Dan. So thanks for sharing that with us. And we'll look forward to many more things to come together.
All right. Thanks, Jamie and Jim. Thanks. Talk soon.
Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.